And it's only on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
All right, good morning, Tennessee Valley, and you are tuned in to Politics and More. And I'm Shannon Moore, your host here at Politics and More. And we've got a lot to talk about today, so let's get started with my opening thoughts. As we finish up the month of July and head toward the remaining months of summer, uncertainty once again plagues our country as the coronavirus, or more precisely the Delta variant of the coronavirus, has begun to occupy the headlines in the news across the nation. Especially in Alabama, the Delta variant has become widely discussed, as cases have been drastically moving up on a daily basis. Now, if one were to look at the new cases of COVID since the month of February here in Alabama, cases had been steadily dropping and eventually reached a fairly steady but low and stable rate of transmission. The Delta variant of the coronavirus has hit Alabama hard, and the daily figures suggest an extremely fast-paced spread of the virus. The country has dealt with the pandemic for almost a year and a half, and for a while it appeared that the pandemic was beginning to ease up. The Delta variant reminds us that the virus remains out there, and potential mutations of it may once again present challenges for us and for medical science. Now, we will doubtless have numerous discussions of the impact of the Delta variant in the months to come, and further debate on the efficacy of the vaccine and its impact with regard to this more contagious strain of COVID. But final words, just stay safe, everyone. And so those are my opening thoughts, and we are joined by our co-host today, Chris Pankey. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, Chris. Well, as we go into the last few months of summer, it is amazing to me anyway just how much the coronavirus has kind of retaken the spotlight in the news cycle.
Well, yeah. I mean, it just with everything that the government is doing, you know, deciding whether or not to mandate, you know, masks and that sort of thing, or even talking about potential shutdowns. You know, there are some places that have already, you know, reinstituted certain guidelines, like I think Savannah, Georgia, you know, was one of the first ones, you know, here in the Southeast. And so it's just crazy how it's just, you know, flashed back again.
Well, and you know, if we look at the statistics, and I don't know if you've seen them here in Alabama, but for a number of months since February, the cases in Alabama had actually kind of dropped down and essentially remained stable. And that went from March, April, May, June, and since early July, and especially mid-July, they have just been skyrocketing. And, you know, the Delta variant is, as health officials have said, extremely more contagious than the original COVID. And so that's why there's a lot of concern out there amongst health officials that this Delta variant is going to essentially, I mean, I think it's the actual main form of the virus here in Alabama right now. I'm not sure if it is in the nation yet. It may actually be.
Yeah, I think it may be, because they came out recently and said that, you know, it's as contagious as chickenpox. And, you know, honestly, you know, we've kind of, you know, had this conversation, you know, you and I about, you know, truth be told, we've had that vaccine hesitancy that they've been talking about, because it's like, well, you know, the vaccine's still on emergency use rather than, you know, full approval from the FDA. But, you know, I'll just go ahead and say that, you know, this past week, just after reading some more information, listening to some more, you know, it ultimately it just comes down to where are the greater risk? Is there more risk from this, you know, relatively new, lacking final approval vaccine or vaccines, since there's several out there? Or is the greater risk from, you know, what's going to happen if you get COVID? And especially, you know, with someone like me who has all these comorbidities they talk about, you know, diabetes, overweight, high blood pressure, you know, even though the Delta variant of COVID is supposedly less severe, it's so much more likely that you're going to contract it, that when you've got those comorbidities, it just ultimately it came down to there's a lot less risk from getting the vaccine than potentially getting COVID. And so this past week I got my first shot, and here in a couple of weeks I'll be fully vaccinated.
Well, you know, and I think for a lot of people it gives them a second time to kind of rethink that. And again, as we go into the fall, the Delta variant of the coronavirus is obviously going to continue to make a lot of headlines, because it is a rapidly spreading mutation, essentially, of the coronavirus. And, you know, there's going to continue to be talk about, well, you know, are people who are vaccinated still catching it? I think the answer probably appears that there are some who do. However, the actual impact of the Delta variant on people who have had the vaccine is much, much less than if they did not. But with the spread of the Delta variant, we're going to kind of see kind of the return to some of these questions that we were dealing with in the winter. For instance, the vaccine mandates. The other day, the CDC director was on Fox News. There is some talk about considering a federal mandate. I think yesterday there was kind of a walking back of that discussion, whatnot. But obviously, I think the issue of mandates will still be out there. I mean, we've seen, you know, different businesses actually requiring their employees to get the vaccine, or, you know, get essentially tested on a weekly basis. I mean, what do you see is in terms of mandates coming down the road?
Well, obviously, you know, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of discussion about it the past week or two. And, you know, I tend to agree with those that say that, you know, it is probably not constitutional for the federal government to issue just a national mandate as saying we're the U.S. government, we're saying all our citizens have to be vaccinated. Now, they're probably going to be okay as an employer saying federal employees have to be vaccinated, in the same way that private employers can say our employees have to be vaccinated, because you don't have a constitutional right to be a federal employee. You don't have a constitutional right to work for any particular company. And so that's where your personal choice, personal liberty comes in. You can choose, I'll be vaccinated and work this particular job, or I'm going to decline the vaccine and go work somewhere else. So, you know, I think that's what's most likely to happen there. Then the question comes back to, what do local governments do? What do cities, what do states do? And I think, you know, I think there's legal precedent that states have a lot more authority to require, you know, vaccinations and that sort of thing, whereas the federal government doesn't.
All right, Chris. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about this right after this break. So stay tuned for more here at Politics and More. All right, we're back with politics and more. And we are talking about the Delta variant of the coronavirus. And I believe we've got a caller, Brian from Huntsville. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. And I am wondering where this slope stops. I happen to be fully vaccinated, but that was a personal choice. And at that, from there, if they want everybody that interacts with the government, not just government contractors, but anybody that applies to it. What about, say, Heinz Ketchup? Does every worker on that assembly line have to be vaccinated? Or what about their families because they interact with that person on the line? Where does it stop? Where does it get to be personal choice? I made mine a personal choice. And what other things can be violated over this? At that point, I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, you raise a good point. And we're joined by Chris. And Chris, we just had a caller who was asking, you know, where does the personal choice begin and where does the government's mandates come into play? And you know, Chris, that's going to be probably something that will play out in the legal system. Would you guess?
Well, it probably will to some degree, but you know, it's like, you know, we were saying before the break, obviously the federal government wears different hats. It acts in different capacities. Sometimes it's acting as the national government, sometimes it's acting as an employer. You know, as you know, an employer, you know, its authority is going to be similar to what other private employers would have. So it's going to have the ability to say, you know, as a condition of employment, you're going to have to be vaccinated. Or as a condition of being an independent contractor that we work with, you know, you're going to have to be, you know, vaccinated if you're an independent contractor in the role of an employee. But I don't think that then extends to everyone that does business with the government. You know, he was saying something about Heinz ketchup. You know, just because the government may buy Heinz ketchup packets, you know, that they ship around to, you know, military bases, I don't think they can say, okay, Heinz Corporation, all of your employees must be vaccinated. Because then it's stepping into the role as federal government instead of employer. But, you know, I think there is a silver lining that I think may be missed in where everybody's talking about this Delta variant. You know, we know it's much more contagious, but it's much less lethal. And so particularly for people that don't have comorbidities, the young, healthy people of the country, where the previous version of COVID might have put them in the hospital or resulted, you know, in a fatality, the Delta variant is much less likely to do that, but at the same time, then they're going to develop natural immunity. So, in my opinion, I think it's much more likely that this could help us along the road to herd immunity because the unvaccinated are exposed and develop natural immunity from contracting the Delta variant. And I really haven't heard anybody talk about that.
Well, and that is an interesting point that you bring up, because, you know, we did talk a lot about herd immunity, especially last year, but it's not been something that's been quite as discussed this year. And, you know, I think the science is still out to some extent on, you know, if people have already had COVID, can they catch this again? It appears that they can. But I don't know. I haven't seen anything about, you know, how it impacts a person if you've already had COVID the first time. But that is a good point that you mentioned.
Well, and the things that I have seen, generally, if someone has either been fully vaccinated or if they have previously contracted COVID, if they contracted a second time, their symptoms are much less severe. They're much more likely to either be asymptomatic or have very mild symptoms. And so, you know, that's why I think, you know, with this Delta variant running around, you know, if you've got the comorbidities, if you're elderly, if you're overweight, diabetic, high blood pressure,
if you've been hesitant to get the vaccine, it's probably a good idea to get it, because even if you've been lucky and avoided COVID up to this point, you're much more likely to come in contact with it and to contract it with the Delta variant running around. And for people with the comorbidities, it's still dangerous, even though it's less severe from a lethality standpoint, because with the comorbidities, you can still wind up in the hospital, wind up, you know, being a fatality.
You know, I remember last year there was discussion about, you know, the coronavirus mutating. And, you know, that was kind of some of the fears of scientists last year, is that this could mutate. And obviously it has. I mean, the Delta is not the only variant out there. I think there's the Lambda, but I have not heard as much about that. I believe that is a some sort of variant that started in South America. But that was one of the biggest, I think, worries for scientists from the get-go, that this coronavirus could mutate. I mean, some were worried it would mutate to even a more deadly form of the disease and everything. But we're going to see, obviously, over the next few months, more discussions about the different mandates that may or may not come down from the federal government or from the state and local governments. And, you know, this is just not just something that's being talked about here in America. I mean, there's actually different countries have responded to the vaccine, and there's been, you know, almost kind of similar discussions about, you know, the personal rights in terms of refusing the vaccine versus getting the vaccine that we've talked about here in America, also being talked about in Europe. In France, for instance, apparently France has always been somewhat less open to vaccines than Americans actually have been. And I'm not talking about recent vaccines. I'm just talking about vaccines in general. But I saw an article the other day where, you know, the French president, Macron, is actually going to be putting in a lot of vaccination requirements, where you will essentially not be able to go into restaurants, bars, other public facilities without essentially showing a vaccine card. And that's, you know, it's caused kind of the similar discussions about personal freedom over there that it has in America.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, to me, just like the caller earlier was saying, I mean, being vaccinated should be something that is a personal choice. It should not be something that is forced upon you, because there are still questions regarding the vaccine. But, you know, like I said, my personal choice was, when I looked at the risk, to me there was more risk being unvaccinated than risk presented by the vaccine. But I still don't want to be in a position where I'm told, you must get this vaccine.
Well,
Because it should be a personal choice.
And I think that's kind of where a lot of the people in France who don't necessarily agree with Macron are kind of siding in, that it should be a personal choice. But essentially his requirements and mandates are going to make it to the point that, you know, without the vaccine, you almost are excluded from, you know, any sort of public engagement. I mean, you won't be able to essentially go into hardly anything eating wise or transportation wise without a vaccine and everything. And I think you're going to also see other countries in Europe kind of struggling with the decision whether or not to mandate the vaccine. I know in Britain they're going to require all healthcare workers, I think, to have the vaccine. In Australia, they've also already made it mandatory for a lot of employees there as well. So it's going to continue to be an issue. And, you know, here in America, we've got colleges that are requiring students who are returning to be vaccinated. And, you know, there's also some question about the legal aspects of that, and that's going to be playing out in the courts.
Well, another thing, too, you see a lot of pushback in places. You know, like, for example, in Florida, there was a school system that was going to require, you know, vaccinations and masks and different things. And so then the governor comes out and issues an order basically that prohibits the schools from doing that. And so I think that's the another aspect that a lot of people are missing in this, is that in certain places in particular, there has been so much government overreach and destruction of personal liberty that people are just getting fed up, and they're starting to stand up and push back and say, no, we're just not going to take this anymore.
And
In California, where they've started issuing some new mandates and even lockdowns and stuff, there's one restaurant owner that said, you know, I'm not going to follow it. I'm, you know, vaccinated or not vaccinated, masked or not masked. Everybody can come in.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. So stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More, and I'm Shannon Moore, your host here at Politics and More, along with our co-host today, Chris Pankey. And Chris, we have been talking about the mandates that are being put out there by different countries, as well as talk about mandates here in America. And one of the things that I think we're going to see in the next few months is kind of that return to the red state versus blue state and how they deal with the Delta variant of the coronavirus. And, you know, it's kind of like what you said. I mean, there was a lot of government overreaching during the pandemic.
Well, you know, and that's exactly what we're talking about with the red state and blue state. I mean, in the blue states, you had, you know, lockdowns. I mean, basically putting restaurants out of business because they couldn't work at a level that would sustain them with profit margins so low anyhow, versus in red states, you know, stuff was opened up, you know, the economy was going. And you saw a lot of people, as the saying goes, voting with their feet, people moving from California and New York to places like Florida and Texas.
Yeah, and this whole idea is going to essentially repeat itself in the next few months, because we're going to see different states reacting differently to how to deal with the Delta variant. Obviously, it's spreading rapidly in Alabama, but I don't see us returning to a lockdown. Do you?
I don't see it in Alabama at all. I don't even know that we're going to wind up with another statewide mask mandate. But, you know, the thing that I think could be a good thing out of potential lockdowns is in a place like California. You know, they've got this whole situation going on with the recall of the governor. And if he starts instituting lockdowns, that's going to be the very thing that is going to really motivate the voters to get him out of office. And hopefully, you know, they'll go for a good candidate that could really make a difference and really turn California around. And I don't know how much you've paid attention to that race, but Larry Elder has got in that race, and he is an excellent conservative candidate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would that would be awesome if his candidacy, and I think it is, actually. He actually may be leading amongst Republicans out there. So we do have that recall election in California, and it was ultimately, I think, kind of spurred along by the pandemic. And if we all remember, that a recall was how Governor Schwarzenegger, from my understanding, got elected in California a number of years ago. So Democrats out there are taking it seriously, and I think they're trying to, you know, claim that it's essentially fake news, why he should be recalled, and that, you know, people are not that interested in doing that, claiming it's going to be expensive, things of that nature. But this whole recall election, it got its momentum, I think, built over the coronavirus pandemic. And you know, also, if you look at California, there have been a good number of people who have left California. I mean, it's not quite the state that it was years ago where people were always like going to California to fulfill the American dream. One of the big problems in California now is they have tremendous homelessness there in California.
Well, they do. And the part of it is, I mean, the average home price is just astronomical. And part of that is because you can't reasonably construct homes, I mean, because of environmental regulations, you know, other governmental regulations. It's just ridiculous. And so it's like any other time where you have limited supply and tremendous demand, the prices go through the roof. I mean, if they were able to build more homes in California, home affordability would increase. You would be able to have more people buying homes, because that's part of the thing with homelessness in California. Yes, some of it is because of drugs and mental illness, but some of it is people just can't afford to buy a home.
The over-regulation in California, that's one of the big problems we have there. And, you know, I was kind of harking back to President Trump when he was in office. I was one of the things that, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize, but he really was able to help roll back a lot of burdensome regulations that, you know, clogging up, you know, the U.S.'s court system and business and things of that nature. And California is starting to become such an over-regulated state that they're, you know, to some extent, you don't have freedom of economy there anymore. And it's like you said, I mean, housing prices in California are through the roof. You could easily buy, for the amount it would cost to buy a house in California, you could easily buy, you know, two or three times that size here in Alabama. That's why people are coming to Alabama.
That's right. I mean, you know, and so that is why California has kind of reached this tipping point, like you said. Rather than everybody trying to go to California, they're trying to get away from California. You know, they talk about how, you know, the price of a U-Haul. You know, if you are leaving California because there's so much demand, it may cost you $2,000. But if you were going to California, you might be able to make it for a couple hundred.
So what, to some extent, I think we are going to see in California with this recall election is, you know, some of it is, you know, directly about Governor Newsom there, because I mean, there are some, a lot of people who thought he was essentially hypocritical during this pandemic. But I would also say that there is almost a component of, is this essentially kind of a ruling on whether Californians want to continue with this overregulated progressive statism there in California itself?
Well, I think it's going to be. And Governor Newsom said something that is one of the few things he's ever said that I actually agree with, which is, you know, this isn't just about, you know, who's going to be governor of California. It's going to have nationwide effects regarding policy. But because really, California had the most draconian lockdown in place. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all saw Newsom ignore his own rules. We saw Nancy Pelosi ignore the rules. And it was all about do what we say, not what we do. Basically, we have the power. We can tell you what to do, but because we have the power, we're going to do what we want.
And that's,
and people are just fed up with that.
Yeah. And that's kind of what, you know, it really will boil down to is in California. I mean, they're a very overwhelmingly Democrat state, but they're also a very overwhelmingly very far left Democrat state. I'm sort of suspect there's very few in the way of moderate Democrats left in that state. And so they are essentially free to do whatever, you know, to pass whatever laws they choose, and, you know, free to, you know, indulge in their progressive ideas. And so that's what they're doing. They are putting a lot of these progressive ideas into place. I mean, in some of these places in California, I mean, you could essentially shoplift and not really get in trouble for that. I mean, that has been made almost, the law has become almost so lenient that you're seeing some of the practical effects of that. And so this recall election, to some extent, I think, will really kind of go down to, are people in California willing to continue along this progressive path, or maybe dial it back a little bit? California is going to stay a very liberal state. I don't see it changing and moving back more conservative. But the question will be, have they gone so far to the left that the majority of people want to put somewhat of a break on that? Or is this just going to continue and probably grow worse? And essentially, California, there will continue to be an exodus of people and businesses out of California, people choosing to have more personal freedom or have more business freedom or a combination of both. I mean, we are seeing an exodus of people purposely leaving California for some of these reasons.
Well, you know, and the thing is, if they're leaving because they're looking for, you know, more opportunity, less regulation, you know, more traditional values, that's great. I just hope that wherever they settle, they don't bring California crazy with them.
Well, you know, that's always kind of a little bit of a concern, is some of the individuals who may be leaving California, they don't completely know why they're leaving California. They just know it's gotten bad. And so I would hope that if they do move to a red state, that they don't incorporate the values that essentially caused California to kind of go downhill into some of, these more conservative states. Because, I mean, there's a whole litany of reasons that California is starting to have a lot of different problems. Now, in California, of course, the far left always and creatively always tries to come up with reasons why it must be the Republicans or conservatives' fault for their problems. But if we kind of trace this back, I mean, California is so far to the left now that some of the problems with far-left progressive politics are finally starting to come to fruition. We're seeing those problems. The homelessness in California is one of those problems. The outlandish home prices are some of those problems. The restrictions on business that we saw during the pandemic, well, you know, a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, went out of business because the restrictions were so ensconced that there was no leniency for them. So, you know, again, I mean, I kind of agree with you, Chris. The exodus from California may continue, but hopefully those California progressive politics will not filter out into more conservative states.
Well, we certainly have to hope so. And like I said, you know, to me, the best thing that could happen for California is if we wind up with a Governor Larry Elder.
What's your thoughts on Governor Newsom? Do you think he's going to get reelected?
You know,
or not really reelected, but come
down to how do they react? You know, do they, put lockdowns back in place? Do they go crazy with mandates? Because I think that would be kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, and he would definitely be out if they start doing
that. All right,
that.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. All right, we're back with politics and more. We're about to talk about a subject that I know Chris and Kelsey are going to want to talk about because it affects a lot of football fans here in the Southeast. So, Chris, take it away.
Well, you know, the other big story of the week, it started last week at SEC Media Days, but, you know, is the idea of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC. And so, on Monday, they formally notified the Big 12 that they were not going to renew their rights with the Big 12 coming up in 2025. On Tuesday, they officially said that, they would like to have an invitation. Wednesday, the SEC extends the invitation that they accept. And then on Thursday, surprisingly, was a unanimous vote to accept them. There was a lot of talk of especially Texas A&M voting against it, possibly Missouri, Kentucky. And there was even talk of maybe it could fail. But then you have this turnaround in just a few days, and Texas A&M votes for them to come in. And so now the real question is going to be, when is it going to happen? Is it going to be 2025 because the Big 12 is saying they're going to fight it and make it difficult? Or is it going to be more like, when Arkansas and Missouri came in, that it was like the following year? What do you think is going to happen there, Kelsey?
I think it'll be 2025. I don't think we're going to see them. I mean, they have to have their rights deal with all that run out first. I don't think it'll be as soon as a lot of people hope that it would be. And I think there's still a lot to figure out of all of this.
Well, there's definitely a lot to figure out. And ultimately, it's like everything else is going to come down to money. And so, I think there's at least a possibility it could happen before 2025. Because if you get a big enough number for a TV rights deal, that it's going to essentially cover the kind of buyout it's going to take to get them out of the Big 12 early, I think it could happen. I'm not saying it will, but it's too early to know how that's going to work out.
It's definitely way too early, but if it's all about money, I mean, can they figure out a deal with the Big 12 to do this so they can join the SEC quicker?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to have to happen. And it's also possible you could have a situation where the Big 12 essentially, ceases to exist, because I saw an article as well a few days ago where the AAC is wanting to basically bring in all of the remaining Big 12 schools into the AAC.
Well, I could tell when this started what it was the downfall of the Big 12. I mean, they aren't going to last without, especially Oklahoma and Texas. They're two biggest names. They just won't last.
Well, it would be kind of interesting to see, because the AAC is one of the better group of five conferences. You know, what would happen if there was some sort of merger between them and, what's left of the Big 12? Could it, effectively be a Power Five conference?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what comes of this and who is the next Power Five conference to come up and challenge the rest of them.
Of course, there's also the possibility that the way this works out, there's so much realignment that you don't really have Power Five anymore. It may just be four. You've got, the SEC, maybe some growth in the Big Ten, and maybe you wind up with just Pac-12 and ACC, as the what was the Power Five conference.
Well, we're going into the era of super conferences. That's what's going to happen. Conferences of four big, and then we'll have 16 teams in each, I think, and then there'll be like one odd man out, which would be, that was speculating Notre Dame. But I think that is definitely the era we're going to, is the super conferences.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it all settles out. But I think in the end, I think it's going to wind up being a good thing, because I think you'll have a lot fewer games where you have Alabama playing Mercer or games like that. You're going to have a lot more of good versus good, big versus big, which is what, you know, football fans really want to see.
That's all we want to see. We don't want to see these little games that are that mean nothing when Alabama plays Mercer. We've never wanted to see that. But now we get to see if you know, this could happen. We get to see more games like, you know, Alabama-Miami, Alabama-Texas, games like that. That's what the football fans want to see.
Right, and it just – I think it's going to it's going to create a situation where you're going to get more of those high-quality games, which I think will pull even more eyeballs to college football. But because, I mean, the reality is, even for big fans, you know, the games that are not those bigger, stronger teams, a lot of times it's like, well, I'll go mow the yard. I know this is going to be 63-0, so I'm not real worried about watching that game.
Well, this is going to be good for all of college football, but we have also seen the thing to where a lot of teams, they want to stop this the college football expansion on another topic. They want to stop the college football expansion talk because they think it's going to be way too many games for these college kids to play.
Are you talking about as far as the playoff?
Yeah, I'm talking about the playoff, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I just think it's bound to happen because, you know, with going from, you know, I didn't really think about it, but going from, you know, a 4-team playoff to a 12-team playoff, you're adding 8 teams, but you're also adding 8 games. It goes from a 3-game playoff to an 11 games, you know, because you've got the first 8 play 4, and then the next 8 play 4, and 3 after that. So that's just so much money that I think it's, again, it all comes down to the money. I think it's going to happen.
It does. Yeah, it comes down to a money, and that money's a big part of it. And we'll never see a day in college football where money does not become a big part of it. But I'm going to hand this back over to Shannon as the show's about to end. Thank you.
All righty. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. And like I said, stay safe out there. Continue to wash those hands and be careful as we deal with this Delta variant. We'll get through it again. And everything. And we're going to be back next week here at Politics and More. So catch us same time, same channel.